Welcome to the Oldie Podcast. This is from our literary lunch featuring guest speakers and kindly sponsored by Noble Caledonia, specialists in worldwide small ship cruising. Our lunches are held monthly. Details and how to book can be found in our magazine and on the website www.theoldie.co.uk.
Our last speaker is one of Britain's leading classicists. She's produced an extraordinary amount of books given her young age. Her first book was Catullus's Bedspread. Then she wrote In the Shadow of Vesuvius. She hit no higher honour than to become the Lady Bird book expert on Homer. And her latest book, widely well reviewed, is The Missing Thread, A New History of the Ancient World Through the Women Who Shaped It, by Dr. Daisy Dunn.
Thank you. You'll have noticed that I'm not Liz Truss either, for which I am sorry. Maybe I'm not. I actually met Liz Truss for the first time about sort of 9 months after she left Downing Street, or to put it another way, about 10 months after she arrived at Downing Street. And she was actually very friendly, so I'm sort of sorry not to see her again in some respects, because I actually came in here today thinking of something she once said, and that was that nobody wants to be in a room or their business to be funded because they are a woman. Of all the things that Liz Truss has said, I happen to agree with that one. Something that worried me about writing a new history of the ancient world through women was that people would think I've shoehorned some girls into the grand narrative of ancient history for the sake of equality, and then brand me woke. To which I'd probably respond, ladies and gentlemen, I write for the Spectator. The fact of the matter is that the women of the ancient world are often just a lot more interesting than the men. Think of I, Claudius, for example. On the one hand, you have the very sort of doltish, ineloquent Tiberius, who just pines after his ex-wife, Vipsania. And the Roman historians paint quite a similar picture of the man. And they also inform us that one of his favourite foods was cucumber. I think you can tell a lot about a man whose favourite food is cucumber. On the other hand, we have his brilliant mother, Livia, so memorably played by Sean Phillips in the series. And she was accused of bumping off pretty much every possible rival to her son's succession. There's a particularly brilliant Latin source revealing that while Livia tried to sort of live up to the reputation that was expected of her, she'd sort of live this very frugal life, she'd make her husband's clothes like a good old Roman matron. Behind the scenes, she also had the most enormous entourage of slaves and helpers with very precise job titles. So she had not only shoemakers and goldsmiths, but she had a pearl setter, a mirror maker, something called in Latin a colorator, which meant it was someone who basically re-dyed your clothes whenever they started to fade through sort of overwashing or exposure to sunlight. She had a couple of male perfumiers, so I think you can definitely tell who was in charge. In Greece as well, the women were often a lot more surprising than the men. Pericles enjoyed all the accolades, of course he did, and many of those were well deserved, but not all of them were. He once came strolling back into Athens after leading this victory over the Greek island of Samos in a civil war. And he expected everyone to come and give him a big pat on the back and celebrate his victory. And lots of people did that, but there was one woman who stepped forward with a very different opinion, and her name was Elpinike, and she was a daughter of Miltiades. It was a well-known military figure. And she reminded him that he'd just lost Athens, many of its best young men, in a war against a fellow Greek city, not a foreign enemy. And she was about 50 years old. She was really sort of an oldie for that time. And Pericles took one look at her, and he smiled, and he said, "At your time of life, it's not very becoming to anoint yourself with perfumed oil, which was a very Greek way of saying, don't get above your station, old woman. So I don't think you'd be particularly welcome at this lunch today. She really had hit the nail on the head, Alpinike. Pericles was all puffed up with pride, when really he should have been hanging his head in shame. The elder women of the ancient world were often very heroic. In the same century, we encounter a lady called Telesilla, who came from Argos in Greece. And in 494 BC, the Spartans decided to invade her city. And Telesilla led the defense effort. So while the men went out to confront the oncoming enemy, Telesilla directed the slaves, she directed the women and the old people to form almost a human wall of defense around the perimeter of the city. And then she herself went around gathering whatever weaponry she could find that was left in the city. She went to people's houses, she went to the temples, and she armed the women. And the Spartans, supposedly, were so taken aback by encountering all these women, lots of elderly women among them, they decided to turn around, considering it rather shameful to have to fight them face to face. So a statue of this heroic woman, Telesilla, was then put up, and the war god Ares, who was usually worshipped by men, was then worshipped as a female god as well in her city of Argos. I would add to my roster of wonderful elder women from the ancient world an honourable mention for Terentia. She was married to Cicero and she lived to the age of 103, which was quite amazing for the Roman period. It wasn't easy being married to Cicero. He was a man who thrived on being praised. He needed to be praised a lot, Cicero. He famously gasconaded in his triumph of having saved the Roman Republic from this devastating conspiracy to overthrow it, led by Catiline and his forces. But actually, hidden in the historic sources, we find that Cicero received his intelligence about this plot from a woman who no one really ever speaks of today. Her name was Fulvia. She got very little of the credit for Cicero's part in this, and Terentia got even less. Now, don't get me wrong, I do not hate Cicero at all. I think he was a brilliant orator, and I'll always have a soft spot for him. But boy, I would not want to be married to him. In some ways, he found his perfect match in Terentia. She loved talking about politics, if ever they were having a conversation and it turned to the topic of domesticity, of cleaning, of washing, she would immediately change the subject and talk about something far more interesting, usually something political, so I think she was very much my kind of woman. When Cicero was then exiled by Julius Caesar and Pompey the Great, Terentia kept her ear to the ground to work out who the next year's politicians would be so that she could chart what hope he would have of being recalled to Rome. Besides all this, she managed her own property, she had her own sort of tenement blocks that she looked after, so she was pretty capable. So I feel incredibly sorry for her when Cicero then did return home from exile and promptly divorced her and remarried. And he was about 60 at this time, and his new bride was 14 or 15. Terentia said to people, oh, he's been charmed by her beauty, which may have been true, but far more than that, he was charmed by her money. He and his wife had to move out of their luxurious villa on the Palatine Hill in Rome when he was exiled, and they'd had to sell off a lot of their belongings and furniture, so they weren't living the kind of life that they had beforehand. And Publilia, the new young bride, just happened to be Cicero's ward, so he knew precisely what her bank balance was. He had protection of it already. In the event, their marriage broke down just months later, but by then the damage had already been done. Not a lot of writing by women survives from the ancient world, but I am reminded at this point of a short truism by a Greek woman called Praxilla. And I think this is kind of as relevant to domestic life as it is to political life, to be honest. She said, "Under every stone, my friend, watch out for a scorpion. I think never has that been said so well. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Daisy, and thank you so much to all three of our terrific speakers, who will all be outside just this door behind me, not where they signed books before lunch, literally just behind this door. And thank you all so much for coming to the Oldie Lunch. Thank you so much.
You have been listening to the Oldie Podcast. Please share this episode. Look out for the Oldie Magazine subscription offer on our website, www.theoldie.co.uk. Thank you and good luck.